Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump says he's prepared to deploy the military to the border with Mexico to assist local officials as they grapple with the flow of illegal immigrants from Latin America.
We are going to be doing some things. I've been speaking with General Mattis. We're going to be doing things militarily. Until we can have a wall and proper security, we're going to be guarding our border with the military.
The White House indicated the strategy would include mobilizing National Guard units. Mr. Trump decried weak U.S. immigration laws that apprehend people crossing the border illegally and then release them into the U.S. He called for stronger laws. At a White House meeting, the president also said a caravan of hundreds of mostly Honduran asylum seekers had been largely broken up by Mexico heading to the U.S. border. He called on Mexico and Central America to do more to halt such caravans.
But I told Mexico very strongly, you're going to have to do something about these caravans that are coming up. And I just noticed that the caravan now, which is toward the middle of Mexico, coming up from Honduras, is breaking up very rapidly. That's because Mexico has very strong immigration laws, as we should have.
Mr. Trump lamented such caravans, calling it sad for both the would-be immigrants and for the citizens of the U.S. In Central African Republic, a peacekeeper by the U.N. was killed, 11 wounded, in an early Tuesday attack at a U.N. base in Tagbara, northeast of the capital, Bangui. Stefan Dujarric is a U.N. spokesman.
The United Nations mission has deployed reinforcements in Tagbara. The Secretary General extends his condolences to the family of the fallen peacekeepers and wishes a speedy recovery to those injured.
The UN said more than 20 of the anti-Ebola militia fighters were killed. UN peacekeepers also discovered the bodies of 21 civilians found near a church. The cause of their death still is unknown. This is VOA News. In remarks at the White House, President Trump said it was time to pull U.S. troops out of Syria.
Our primary mission in terms of that was getting rid of ISIS. We've almost completed that task, and we'll be making a decision very quickly in coordination with others in the area.
He placed the amount of IS-held territory recaptured in both Syria and Iraq at nearly 100%. The U.S. has some 2,000 troops on the ground in Syria, including special operations forces advising Kurdish militia fighting IS. It also employed an air campaign to attack jihadist positions. James Jeffrey, former diplomat and distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, said the IS is on the ropes.
What we have left in Syria is a few patches of ISIS. In our area, it's the east of the Euphrates. There's about 2,000 ISIS people along the Iraqi border. It includes some of their leadership.
He said the larger U.S. mission in Syria is containing Russia, Iran, and Damascus, and that, he said, would require a longer-term military political and economic strategy. Russian President Vladimir Putin says he hopes a planned meeting of the Global Chemical Weapons Watchdog will clear up allegations of Russian involvement in the poisoning of a former Russian double agent in Britain. Moscow has asked the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons to meet Wednesday on the matter. Mr. Putin said British authorities may need up to 2 months to complete their investigation. The origin of the nerve agent used March 4 against Sergei Skripal has not been determined, but he says he's still bewildered by what he called the anti-Russia campaign. The case has resulted in the expulsion of dozens of Russian diplomats. Houthi rebels in Yemen hit a Saudi oil tanker off the main port city Hodeidah Tuesday, apparent retaliation from Monday's airstrike on the city that killed several civilians. Saudi media said the vessel sustained slight damage. In Geneva, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed for a political settlement to the 3-year conflict that has left 22 million aid dependent.
Nearly half of all children aged between 6 months and 5 years old are chronically malnourished and suffer from stunting, which causes development delays and reduced ability to learn throughout their entire lives.
He said he's optimistic, however, about the prospect of an effective inter-Yemen dialogue leading to peace. The rights group Amnesty International said villagers in central Mali discovered the bodies of 6 people in a mass grave who had been arrested by the military. The rights group said it's evidence of an army campaign against sympathizers of jihadist groups. 3 major U.S. stock indices rebounded from sharp losses sustained Monday, the benchmark Dow Jones gaining nearly 400 points. And today marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of American civil rights leader, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., gunned down by an assassin April 4, 1968.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, April 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leoneans continue to wait for the results of their presidential runoff election, even as both parties are claiming victory.
By law, it's the National Electoral Commission that has the right to announce results. So we want the parties to focus on the process and avoid proclaiming any result that is not official from the National Electoral Commission.
Lucien Momo is the spokesman for the Sierra Leone Political Parties Registration Commission. Guinean security forces are urged to exercise restraint as protests over local elections continue. South Sudan's former political detainees join an alliance of opposition groups, and Zimbabwe's president continues a five-day visit to China today, Wednesday.
President Mnangagwa is seeking investment mostly in Zimbabwe's infrastructure. So China is known now as a country that is able to deliver infrastructure projects rapidly to African countries without even any consideration for good governance.
Taban Nare is a Zimbabwean political analyst. Israel cancels a deal to relocate thousands of African migrants, and Uganda is pressed for land amid refugee influx. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The two candidates in Sierra Leone's presidential runoff election have both claimed victory. But authorities say only the Electoral Commission can declare final results. The two candidates are former Foreign Minister Samura Kamara of the ruling All People's Congress Party and former military ruler, retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio of the main opposition Sierra Leone People's Party. The European Union Observer Mission in Sierra Leone has criticized both parties for privately fueling a divisive discourse and an unwarranted attacks on demands on the National Electoral Commission, known as NEC. Lucia Momo, spokesman for the Sierra Leone Political Parties Registration Commission, tells viewers Peter Clotty that his organization has called on the two competing parties to respect the mandate of the National Elections Commission.
Yeah, the press release basically is to ask the leadership of the two political parties to refrain from claiming themselves winner of the just concluded presidential runoff. Because these are caused confusion in the minds of their supporters and the people. One will come at one time and say, we are winning, and the other one will come at another time and say, we are winning. But by law, it's the National Electoral Commission, NEC, that has the legitimate and sole right or responsibility to announce results. So we want to allay or stop this confusion between the supporters of the political party, and we want the parties to focus on the process and avoid proclaiming any result that is not official from the National Electoral Commission.
Momo, why do you tell people who say that the PPRC is too late and that these two political parties have been declaring themselves winners of the presidential runoff and that the train has already left the station before the PPRC will come to complain? What do you say to that?
Well, I don't think that information is coming from an informed source. And this all started yesterday with the parties declaring themselves as being winners. But as a regulator of political parties, we want to ask them that they should stop or desist from making such pronunciations until the pronunciation is being made by the chief electoral officer, who is the national reforming officer of the National Electoral Commission. That is what the law says. And we are looking at the bigger picture. We do not want, when NEC would have announced the final results, people start creating confusion here and there. Because if you go to two political party offices, you will see people there celebrating in a jubilant mood. So we want to ask that they stop this and wait for the National Electoral Commission. We do not want any confusion in the minds of the people.
Well, Momo, some of these political parties are saying they have the right to collate results that they've collated across the country, and they feel confident that they are winning, and that is why they are telling their supporters, and they see nothing wrong with it, and they deny that this is causing confusion and chaos.
And now, if you look at the trend, what is happening, both parties are saying, we are winning, we are winning, we are winning. though their supporters are in a confused state of mind. So what we are saying, basically, we know they all have their own tally center, they've collected their data. We are appealing to wait until these results are made public by the National Electoral Commission. Mind you, some of these results received from the field have to go through tally. It might be that some or might be excluded. So we want the National Electoral Commission, the body set up by law, to announce the result rather than the political parties claiming they are winning the election.
Does the Sierra Leonean Political Parties Registration Commission, or PPRC, have the power to implement any punitive measures against any of these two parties if they fail to heed your caution not to announce the results of the election?
There are no punitive measures with that. That is why the revised Political Parties Code of Conduct asks political parties to ensure that they go by the laws. And the law states that next to announce the results. So we do not want this confusion in the mind of the people. That is why we are saying they should stop announcing, they should wait for the National Electoral Commission to really announce it, which is official.
Lucy Amamo is the spokesman for the Sierra Leone Political Parties Registration Commission. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Freetown. Human rights groups are calling on Guinean security forces to exercise restraint as protests over last February's local elections continue in the country. Since the local elections, 15 people have been killed and scores injured in clashes with security forces by opposition demonstrators and government supporters. Amnesty International West Africa researcher Francois Patouel spoke to Ricky Stryak about the ongoing concerns in Guinea as protests are set to resume this week.
There is a very tense political and social environment in Guinea. There is both the opposition that is contesting the results of the local elections that were held in February, joined with the strike movement that was launched by the teachers' union and which have been coinciding. And it's those two social and political movements which have created a lot of upheaval in the country, in Conakry, but also in other cities across the country. There's at least 15 people that have been killed during these protests. There is now a lot of hate in media and in the social media that's fueling the crisis. There is a real risk that the situation will deteriorate further.
When we talk about the teacher's strike, in terms of, you know, real-world effects on people living in Guinea, are the schools not functioning?
Yes, so during the teacher strike, one of the leverage that the teachers had is that they suspended schools. So for a number of months, school was suspended. It happened also last year. And so the problem is that these delays, the school suspensions are delays in the schooling system and in the academic lives of the students. So you also have protests of students who are calling on the government to meet the demands of the teachers in order for the schools to reopen. Civil society also was involved in that movement. There were civil society organizations that called for the reopening of the schools in the beginning of the year. These protests have been repressed by the security forces, so it's really affecting the pupils' academic life. It risks, if the strike continues and if there is no dialogue between the trade unions and the government, there is a risk that this will further disrupt the academic lives of the students.
In the past, Guinean forces have they've been violent with impunity, then they've not had charges brought against them. Is this a concern?
Exactly. So Guinea has a, unfortunately, there is a real culture of impunity and excessive use of force within the security forces in Guinea. We've counted 15 deaths during the demonstrations that have happened since the beginning of the year, but there is more than 80 people who have been killed since 2010. During protests in Guinea. A large number of these were killed by security forces who are alleged to have used excessive use of force. And unfortunately, we are not seeing investigations being carried out in these killings and people being brought to justice for these killings. And so this cycle of impunity just fuels the violence as the protesters do not trust the security forces are there to protect them, and as the security forces know that they can use excessive force in total impunity. So this is a very big concern that Amnesty and Human Rights Watch have.
Today's Wednesday, April 4th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa continues his five-day visit to China today, Wednesday, his first state visit outside of Africa since taking over from Robert Mugabe. The president said he is in China to thank President Xi Jinping and the people of China for supporting Zimbabwe during the Western sanctions on Zimbabwe. Mnangagwa also is seeking economic collaboration between Zimbabwe and China in the areas of infrastructure development, mining, and transport. Thabang Nare, a Zimbabwean political analyst, says China is known to deliver economic development to develop infrastructure projects rapidly in African countries without any consideration for good governance, human rights, and corruption. As such, Nare says China will be a perfect partner as Mnangagwa seeks to jumpstart the Zimbabwe economy.
President Mnangagwa is seeking investment mostly in Zimbabwe's infrastructure. So China is known now as a country that is able to deliver infrastructure projects rapidly to African countries without even any consideration for good governance, for corruption. And so China is seen as one of the best countries that Zimbabwe can work with as it seeks to dig itself out of the pits that it had imposed itself in.
President Mnangagwa said before his departure that one purpose of his visit will be to thank President Xi Jinping of China and the people of China for standing by Zimbabwe during the time that Zimbabwe was an isolated country, particularly during the time of the Western sanctions. There are some people who have been talking some kind of a conspiracy theory suggesting that perhaps China might have had a role to play when the military intervened to remove President Robert Mugabe.
Yes, China has always had this interest in Zimbabwe, and I think it became more clear during the time of the coup. It was really suspicious that the army general, who is now vice president, retired General Chiwenga, was in China during the time of the coup. So many people thought that he had gone there to seek political support, such that if the project had failed or there were problems, China was going to use its vote within the United Nations Security Council to support what was happening in Zimbabwe. I think Mnangagwa is also playing his politics here in that by seeking Chinese support, he is hoping that he will also be able to negotiate for Western support. We know that countries like the United States of America still have imposed restrictions on Zimbabwe, including targeted sanctions.
The visit comes at a time that Zimbabwe is preparing for elections sometime this year, and also at a time that one of the opposition leaders for the coalition MDC accused Britain and China of supporting Mnangagwa's election as the next president. Although we must say that the British embassy in Zimbabwe has denied it is supporting Mnangagwa.
I think any embassy will deny some of the background work that they do to push their own economic and political interests. But clearly, from the optics, we have seen that the British current ambassador in Harare is very supportive of Mnangagwa.
Thabang, what do you think about Mnangagwa's overall rapprochement with the West?
So Mnangagwa has obviously taken this position that he is not a Mugabe prodigy or disciple. And as a result, he is a businessman. He does not pretend to be a nationalist. You know, all he wants to do is to do business for himself, his friends, some of whom are in the army. And Zimbabweans will hopefully benefit at the end of the line, which is why he stresses that Zimbabwe is open for business. He has said that he admires President Kagame of Rwanda. And partly the admiration comes from this development that takes place without necessarily ensuring that there is freedom and human rights and good governance. So he's seeking to build a mini China using Zimbabwe, where you will have state enterprises and a political elite that makes the decisions. As it is, most of these deals that are being signed in China are not being ratified by Parliament. We do not know the content. All you hear are the numbers, you know, 4.2 billion, 1 billion. But the content, as in, what are the conditions? Are those conditions good enough for Zimbabweans? Are Zimbabweans happy with those deals? That those details are not being shared. So in the short term, obviously, Mnangagwa seems to be making progress because he is saying the right words, meeting the right people. But in the long term, I think Zimbabweans themselves might stand to lose because we'll sell our resources for a song.
Tabang Nare is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Dallas in Texas. South Sudan's former political detainees have joined an umbrella of nine opposition groups known as South Sudan Opposition Alliance. The 11 leaders were arrested in Juba in December 2013 after President Salva Kiir accused them of attempting to overthrow him. They were free after the South Sudan High Court found no evidence implicating them in the alleged coup. Kosti Manembi, spokesman of the former political detainee, says his group is joining the alliance to work for peace in South Sudan.
We have signed that charter that we can no longer tolerate the continuation of a senseless war when we know that it can be ended. And we think that SPLM-IG is not serious. And we agree with the sentiments of the other groups that we must end this war, that there is absolutely no reason for the war and the violence to continue.
Let me take you back. You said that you signed the charter because you believe that the SPLM in government, that's the Kiir's government, is not serious about peace. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Well, they are not serious about this because we don't see anything difficult about implementing the agreement. But consistently, they have not implemented the agreement. They have consistently violated it, beginning from October 2015, when the 28 states were decreed totally contrary to the agreement. And then it has since been increased even to 32, also by decree, and many, many other violations. If you look at the report of JEMEC itself, JEMEC does admit that very little of the agreement, if anything, has ever been implemented.
With due fairness to the government in Juba and the Kiir administration, Mr. Kosti Manembi, they have been going to Addis Ababa to sit down and talk with you. That is a sign that they want peace.
It may look like a sign of seriousness, but it is not, because what is their position in Addis? Their position in Addis is that there should be no change in the agreement, that the agreement should be implemented exactly as it was signed in 2015, and the only thing that they want is that others should come and join them in government. Let us increase the size of the assembly. Let us increase the size of the cabinet, these institutions. To us, this is not the problem. We have not gone there to get our positions. In our view, what needs to be done is to address the problem and resolve it. And one of the things we should be doing is actually having a new government, not a bloated one, knowing that the government, as we stand now, the government is broke. It doesn't have money. How do you expand the executive? How do you expand parliament? How do you expand the commissions and other institutions when there is no money, when the government does not even have money to pay its own employees right now? It is unable to pay the army. The army therefore goes and lives off the people. They loot, they rob, because they want to survive.
Let's talk about the faith of your colleagues who are in Juba. I understand that the government of national unity is made up of former detainees. What is their faith with the new development that you have joined the alliance? Are they still part of you?
The government, what is called the government of national unity, itself has opposition in it. You have SPLM-IG. You have SPLM-IO. What is IO? IO means in opposition, is it not?
Kosti Manembi is the spokesman for the former political detainees of South Sudan. He was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program. Israel has done an about-face after agreeing to a compromise on illegal immigration from Africa. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu canceled a new agreement with the UN Refugee Agency to send 16,000 African migrants to Western countries after his right-wing coalition partners rejected it. Cabinet Minister Naftali Bennett said it's a bad deal because 20,000 Africans will be allowed to remain in Israel. Bennett rejected claims by the migrants that they are refugees, describing them as economic migrants and infiltrators who threaten the Jewish character of the state. Opposition leader Isaac Herzog accused Netanyahu of caving into hardliners and described the prime minister's about face as a theater of the absurd. Herzog warned the government not to go back to its original plan of the forced expulsion of most of the African migrants in Israel. He said sending them back to Africa is a violation of international law because it would endanger their lives. The Africans entered Israel illegally over the past decade, most of them coming from war-torn Eritrea and Sudan. They survive by doing menial jobs, mostly in restaurants and hotels. All that we ask is to let us work and everything will be fine, said Suleiman, who is employed at a restaurant in Tel Aviv. But now, even their meager livelihood is in jeopardy. A day after welcoming the deal between Israel and the UN Refugee Agency, the African community in Israel is back in limbo. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The refugee population in Uganda stands at more than 1.4 million and growing, thanks to conflicts in the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan. The influx is forcing Uganda to rethink its decades-old policy of allocating refugees plots of land to live on and farm. Halima Atumani reports from the Kwangwale refugee settlement in western Uganda.
Ugandan officials at the ministerial office responsible for refugee affairs have been accused of a range of offences, including fraudulent food distribution, fraudulent refugee lists, and forcing refugees to pay bribes to get registered. The irregularities were discovered after UN partners followed internal procedures and demanded an expeditious investigation. A team of investigators from the World Food Programme are reportedly in the country to support the investigations. Uganda Prime Minister Ruhakana Rugunda, however, downplayed the scandal, calling it a small issue that will be handled.
It's true there have been some reports that there may be ghost refugees. Government last week instituted a team from the CID to investigate the matter. We're expecting the report and we'll deal with it.
Rose Malango, the UN resident coordinator for Uganda, expressed concern, saying the rule of law must be followed to ensure those responsible are brought to justice.
The work that we are involved in, the resources that we are talking about, touch human lives. So it is absolutely unacceptable that any of these resources should be misused. This is not just about resources. This is also about human dignity. We've heard about allegations of abuse of women and girls, and it's absolutely fundamental to make sure that we do everything in our power collectively to make sure we protect all women and girls, whether they're citizens or refugees.
Finances meant for refugees are channeled through the various UN agencies in the country and sometimes through the office of the Prime Minister. Some monies given to aid refugees through various agencies were allegedly given back to some officials in the office of the Prime Minister. Last week, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, sounded an alarm for $3.2 billion for South Sudan refugees in the East African region. While in Uganda, he didn't mince his words.
Whenever this allegation, and it happens, pertain to our activities or to activities of the UN has very robust systems in place to investigate and to take sanctions. And this is resolved. So on our side, there is a full commitment to do that.
For now, the Minister for Relief, Disaster Preparedness and Refugees has directed the Permanent Secretary in the Office of the Prime Minister to interdict for top officials as investigations continue. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that's it for this Wednesday, April 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Reiki Shryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a lovely day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we continue our discussion about presidential transitions on the continent. We'll take a closer look at Sierra Leone, where a troubled runoff is underway. Sierra Leone's Supreme Court approved the Election Commission's request to delay the runoff presidential vote after the lifting of an interim injunction that had stalled preparations.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.